This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
You're listening to KCBS In Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area is talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In Depth.
Good evening, I'm Brian Goble, and welcome to a live special edition of KCBS In Depth. Tonight, we continue our coverage and analysis of today's historic decision by President Joe Biden to drop out of the presidential race. Around 10:46 this morning, our time, the president announced in a letter posted on social media that it was in his best interest, in the best interest of his party and the country, to stand down and focus solely on fulfilling his duties as president. A short time later, he threw his support behind Vice President Kamala Harris. There is a lot to delve into tonight, with reaction pouring in from congressional representatives, Democratic Party leaders, Republicans, world leaders, and voters across the Bay Area in the country. To give us some political analysis tonight and some historical perspective, we're joined by David McEwen, chair and professor of the Political Science Department at Sonoma State University. Good evening, David.
Well, it's a pleasure to join you. Thank you for having me.
Well, there was a lot of pressure on the president leading up into today's announcement. What do you think changed?
Well, if you go back and think about the debate performance and then the Biden team's lack of performance after that debate, not having a press conference afterwards, really kind of trying to elongate and slow down the process, it was that poor response that caused a number of kind of dominoes to fall. Democrats, particularly progressive Democrats, younger Democrats, and then members of the House and Senate began to float ideas about Biden being off the ticket. You couple that with a couple of noteworthy folks who also talked about Biden dropping out of the race: George Clooney, Adam Schiff, Nancy Pelosi behind the scenes, and then donors started to slow down their dollars. And donors slowing down their dollars and giving also gave pause. And then, of course, Joe Biden saw some of the polling data that was provided, particularly in swing states, and showed how he was faring, for example, in the Rust Belt states of Michigan, Pennsylvania, and so on. All of this leading to this really kind of heavy pressure as he is fighting and battling COVID to lead to this announcement that we saw this morning at 10:46, as you talked on the lead-in.
I'm curious now how this begins to play out. Now, he endorsed Kamala Harris. Well, first of all, talk a little bit more about that decision, about endorsing the vice president, and what happens in the next 48 hours.
Sure. So if you look at Democratic Party rules, you look at the convention that's coming up from August 19th to August 22nd in Chicago, there are certain rules about the delegates that Joe Biden has. Those rules say that the delegates are pledged to him, but the delegates can vote their conscience. Now that he is essentially releasing those delegates, he can exercise some discretion, if you will, urging the delegates to go for someone like Kamala Harris. So this gives Kamala Harris an opportunity to be in the driver's seat, to have first right of refusal for the nomination. It would be unlikely to go uncontested, but Democrats then have to worry about an open, uncontested kind of fight at the convention itself, which could be a problem. If you kind of back up from that, from when they meet in Chicago, there's the opportunity for a virtual vote of those delegates, a virtual poll that would take place between August 1st and August 7th. Even prior to that, under the Democratic Party's rules, the Democratic National Committee, the DNC Rules Committee, has and can meet 48 hours after the delegates have been released when the candidate is no longer a candidate or nominee. So if Joe Biden has released those delegates, for example, this morning with this announcement, 48 hours from now, the DNC Rules Committee would meet. And then they would lay out the process for what's going to happen for the allocation of delegates. That doesn't mean they're going to move the delegates. They're simply going to lay out the process of what that open convention, open contest would look like. Now, the DNC Rules Committee had scheduled a meeting for Friday of this week. It's not going to last that long. So basically, Kamala Harris has the next 48 hours to try to lock up as much support as she can, to demonstrate to party elders, like, for example, Barack Obama and Michelle Obama, that she can do this thing. And then you have this virtual straw poll and then the follow-on convention. That would all put Kamala Harris in the driver's seat to try to secure the nomination in a quote-unquote open convention, even though there's a lot going on behind the scenes and below the surface, if you will, like an iceberg.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about Vice President Kamala Harris as the presidential candidate. What do you see as her greatest strengths as a presidential candidate, and what are her potential weaknesses?
Sure. If you look at Kamala Harris's kind of meteoric rise, right, California Attorney General, but also, you know, District Attorney in San Francisco, started as an assistant district attorney in Alameda County, certainly her role and her progression, U.S. Senate, and then on to be the Vice President of the United States. You look at all of that, there's a lot in her record. There are a number of things there where her record might be a little more thin on the environment, so they've tried to correct that as she's been Vice President. She hasn't had as much opportunity on foreign policy and security policy, so they've been having her do more around, for example, the Munich Security Conference the last couple of years and dealing with European security issues, particularly around Ukraine. And then you see that there's also an opportunity for her to do things around green jobs and the Biden programs that have involved, for example, different initiatives with chips, with manufacturing jobs. So she will ride or run on the Biden economics plan. But at the same time, she's also has more liberal positions, and she brings some excitement to the ticket. That excitement and that energy, they are hoping will energize young voters, will energize the campaign, and lead to a boon in donors and campaign spending. But she did run for president in 2020 against Joe Biden. And her campaign against Joe Biden and other Democrats was just so-so. It did flame out quickly. And then she's going to have to contend with some issues that Republicans are going to bring up. Some of those issues, the principal issue, is probably going to be related to immigration and crime. Now, as a former prosecutor, this is probably something that she can handle. But nonetheless, the issues of immigration and crime, the Trump team are going to run out of the gate and attack Kamala Harris and the Biden administration directly. So look for that as a theme from Donald Trump and J.D. Vance and their Republican kind of proxies. For her, she's going to be talking about issues related to what they've done and accomplished in the Biden administration. But she also has to put forward a prospective vision. What is her vision and what does that look like in a Kamala Harris administration? It should be an interesting, exciting race. It will also be really contentious because obviously she's a multiracial woman and these issues are going to be under the surface for many voters. And it's going to be a very expensive race. And that, in that sense, the next 106 days should be both exciting and fresh. Frustrating, interesting, and at the same time, quite controversial.
Yeah, it's fascinating to hear how voters are reacting today. Some Democratic voters say they're 100% behind the vice president, while others saying uncertainty this close to the election is worrying. There was one Democratic voter from Portland that spoke to the Associated Press.
I'm going to be the nominee. If she's not, then I think there's going to be more bad blood within the Democratic Party. That's why I'm uncertain. I'm not positive what's going to happen next, and it makes me a little bit nervous.
A little bit nervous, he says. Here in the Bay Area, KCBS reporter Jeffrey Schaub has been speaking to voters in the North Bay.
Michelle Bryant is African-American and lives in Marin City. It is mostly a community of color. She says everyone she knows supports Kamala Harris and owns Kamala dolls.
Oh, they had Barbie dolls, right? Well, they came out with a Kamala doll, and we all have them.
Does it come in a box like a Barbie doll?
It's in a box like a Barbie doll.
Elsewhere in predominantly liberal Marin, we found that uncertainty about Harris remains, perhaps reflecting her polling. Only 30% of Americans have a favorable view of the vice president.
I'm not sure that the support for Kamala is really there.
I feel like she tends to ramble on and you know, just kind of laugh about issues that seem to be pretty serious.
She is not my maybe best Pete Buttigieg as a vice president.
Buttigieg, the Secretary of Transportation. In Marin County, Jeffrey Schaub, KCBS.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things, like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
And then, of course, there's Republican voters and swing voters. We're joined today by David McEwen, the chair of the Political Science Department at Sonoma State University. David, your reaction to some of those reactions that we're hearing and what it needs to be the strategy for swing voters for the vice president, assuming she is the nominee.
Well, we do have some polling data from battleground state surveys that are head-to-head of Kamala Harris versus Donald Trump. Many of those, though, a bit sporadic, kind of a mixed view. And, for example, we see polls that show her trailing Donald Trump in Sunbelt states like Arizona and Nevada, and also in Pennsylvania, a key Rust Belt state. Democrats have to win Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin to have a shot at 270 electoral votes. But then we go to a state like, for example, Georgia, and she seems to be trailing Donald Trump a little bit more in Georgia than you might expect, and that is somewhere around 5 or 6 points. Then there are other surveys that present this mixed picture from Pennsylvania, Virginia. And Virginia is important because Virginia begins voting on September 20th, less than 4 weeks after the Democratic convention ends. So it is a mixed message, if you will, or a mixed view when we look particularly at swing state voters. But most of those polls, Brian, are around registered voters and not likely voters. What we get after both conventions and kind of the traditional kickoff around Labor Day are polls that start to concentrate on likely voters, voters who've voted in the past, who we can verify or have some art to understanding their past positions. So it's a much more reliable set of surveys. Right now, what we're getting are a lot of registered voter polls that have a larger margin of error and a lot more wiggle room, if you will, a lot more noise. And it's the combination of those two different types of voters that are giving us really a mixed picture. So Donald Trump comes out of the Republican convention and the attempted assassination of him with a bump. Democrats would come out, if Kamala Harris is the nominee, with a little bit of a bump. So that puts us near the end of August, around the Labor Day traditional kickoff, where we should have a relatively tight race.
I want to talk a little bit about how a running mate would play into this. I mean, there's a lot of names being mentioned. Andy Beshear, Mark Kelly, Roy Cooper, Josh Shapiro, Gretchen Whitmer. Who pops out at you as a person with the most potential at this point? And does it have to be somebody who can appeal to swing voters in swing states?
Yeah, thank you for that question. So there's kind of the traditional way of looking at a vice presidential selection is someone who helps you grow the map, someone who helps you, you know, win those Rust Belt states, for example, for Democrats of Pennsylvania and Michigan and Wisconsin, for, you know, J.D. Vance to help Donald Trump in a state like Arizona, Nevada, states that they see as critical for themselves. When you look at that map that way and your vote counting, there are a lot of vulnerabilities for a Harris candidacy that are in the Rust Belt and in the Sun Belt and across the map. So one way to look at this is to look at states that can help you deliver in some of those vulnerable spots. Perhaps that's Governor Roy Cooper in North Carolina with its electoral votes, but that's a state that went barely for Barack Obama and then has moved over to the Republican column. It's a difficult state to win for Democrats, a very close battleground state. You could look at Senator Kelly, the U.S. Senator, Democratic Senator from Arizona, but you're also opening up a Senate seat in that area if you did that. So you can vote count. That's certainly one way, Brian, to do it. I would argue that there's something else they have to consider, and they have done this, and that's looking at the message. The message is that they know that from their own internal polling and tracking that the message around Biden economics and the messages around Donald Trump being a threat to democracy have not grabbed voters, particularly independent swing voters, as much as they thought it would. So there's a bit of frustration there. So one thing the Harris campaign and her team are doing is backing up, taking a look at this, and considering some unconventional names. One of those names is Admiral McRaven. Admiral McRaven was the leader of Special Operations. He's the commander who directed the SEAL team raid that took out Osama bin Laden. He's a retired naval special warfare officer. This is a guy who provides some bona fides in terms of world affairs, national security affairs. And if the argument is that the world is on fire because of the Biden administration, he blunts that. So you have kind of two models. Are you running for message? That's where McRaven's name has risen to the top. Or are you running for electoral votes and vote count, even though you may have multiple vulnerabilities across the country? And who delivers that best for you? The other component I would add is that there's also competing ideas about, do you draw the contrast and make it strong? Do you put, if you have Kamala Harris, do you get someone like Mayor Pete on there? Or do you get another woman on there, someone like Gretchen Whitmer? What does that look like? And what are the ramifications of this? Because in so many ways, we haven't been in this spot because, as many of your listeners will know, it was LBJ 1968 when he made his speech at the end of March, getting out of the 1968 election, and we're not any place like that. We are almost, to the end of July as Democrats are headed to their convention, a much different political season, if you will.
Would like to talk about the vice president as a campaigner. She did have some stumbles when she ran a presidential campaign. There was some reporting in the Washington Post the other day talking about how the campaign was managed and several staffers resigned. That said, though, how are things different this time? And how does the Democratic machine, there's apparently a war chest of $250 million. How do they get behind the vice president or the nominee?
Yeah, there's a couple of elements here. One is that the money as designated, some of that money is designated for the Biden for President campaign. That Biden for President account had almost $100 million as of the end of June. Then there are other accounts. Some of them go to the DNC. Some of them go to party building activity. Some of them are identified as more independent, if you will. But if Joe Biden is pushing his own weight behind Kamala Harris, if she has this 48-hour window to really make her case to the Democratic Party, and then part of that open convention and virtual straw poll over the next 2 weeks, to do that, she would have access to these dollars. And we know that donor dollars for Democratic fundraising activities today went way up with this message in less than the 12 hours since Joe Biden made the announcement. So she has the donor dollars, but there are other components here for her to consider. And those include kind of moving forward and thinking about additional components to her campaign that could help her. As the vice president, one thing that she has is she ran unsuccessfully for president, but she has one of the best campaign teams going, a campaign team that she also happens to share with Gavin Newsom that has helped him in the past, and a campaign team based in San Francisco that also has a long, rich history with other Democratic heavyweights and with Kamala Harris herself when she ran for U.S. Senate back in 2016. So there are elements, or 2018 rather, there are elements of this that do help her to kind of set aside dollars, elite kind of connections, and mind the party, even though she might not have, say, developed or done well when she ran for president back in 2019, 2020.
I had one question about some of the deadlines for names appearing on the ballot in states like Ohio. Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez did a very long Instagram post the other day talking about how she was deeply worried about how Republicans are going to fight names on ballot in the state of Ohio because of some laws that they have in effect there. Can you give us your take on that in terms of the deadlines and how the vice president's name actually gets on the ballot?
Yeah, so there is this debate, particularly put together by the Heritage Foundation, and some of your listeners will, you know, that name will ring a bell relative to Project 2025. But the Heritage Foundation memo that was written argued that there would be a process of litigation that if someone was on the ballot in Ohio other than Joe Biden, it would be litigated and make a difficult and even perhaps unsuccessful attempt to have that name removed. But if you, and that could preclude anyone else from getting on the ballot in Ohio. Republicans have made big political hay about this. Speaker Mike Johnson did the same thing as well. He's talked about this today, that perhaps there should be this push to prevent Democrats from changing who appears on the ballot in a state like Ohio. The problem is that Joe Biden is not the party's nominee now. Democrats haven't met, and they haven't voted, if you will, with those delegates to make him formally the nominee of the party. And generally, states have been allowed for the major party's nominee to determine whose name is on the ballot. That part is correct, but it would be unlikely that a state law would make Biden to be forced as listed on the ballot, which is the argument that is seen by many Republicans as forcing the issue in Ohio. So while AOC, Ocasio-Cortez talked about this, it seems unlikely that legal challenges, principles related to who the voters get the vote, that's unlikely to happen. Another way of thinking about it is that the Republicans are not likely to tell the Democratic Party who they can put on the ballot, whether that's in Ohio or in other states, but it could be a potential legal sticking point while the process of election administration is going on.
Okay, let's turn now to the campaign of former President Donald Trump. What was the Trump's campaign reaction, and how does this change for the Republican campaign?
Yeah, the initial reaction, and the Trump campaign has already issued an ad out against Kamala Harris, which gives us some insight into their at least initial reaction. And the Harris people, to their credit as well, also had an ad that was released on Twitter or X. That ad is takes off a 2020 Democratic primary ad, so it was an easy ad for them to turn around in that sense. The Trump campaign has talked about or is trying to tie Kamala Harris, the VP, with the travails, the difficulties of the Biden administration. So this, again, is issues related to poor standing in the world, economic difficulties and economic uncertainty, worries that voters have about their pocketbooks, and tying those issues to immigration, to crime. Those are the issues that they're going to hit Kamala Harris very hard on. In other words, they're treating the announcement today that Kamala Harris is being backed by Joe Biden. They think it is a done deal that she will become the nominee, and so they are tying the two together. That, for example, we've known all along, quote unquote, that a vote for Joe Biden was really a vote for Kamala Harris, and the reason the country's messed up is because of the two of them, tying them together. They'll continue to do that. They will have to pivot, however. Remember, Kamala Harris is a former prosecutor. She's someone who energizes a lot of younger voters and those that are active in the party or on the sidelines and worried about Joe Biden's age. And now that issue has slipped to the side. So look for this to present really some interesting ideas as well, because remember, we have an early September debate also scheduled after what would be the second debate. And is that going to happen or not? It would happen just less than 2 weeks after the Democratic convention in Chicago.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, how do you think the two would fare on a debate stage together?
I think it would be must-watch TV. The one thing about the debate where Joe Biden did not fare so well against Donald Trump a couple of weeks ago, it wasn't richly watched. Sure, 45, 46 million, but compared to what we've seen in past debates, it wasn't heavily viewed. This particular debate between a former prosecutor from the left coast, from liberal San Francisco, against Donald Trump, that guy who's pledged about unity, but at the the same time as someone who's been very divisive for our politics since he announced coming down the escalator in New York that he was going to run for president 2016, 2015, 2016, since this would be must-watch TV because of the fireworks that would go on. Kamala Harris would talk about the Dobbs decision. She would talk about the Supreme Court. She would talk about the things they've accomplished in the Biden administration, but at the same time, she would prosecute the case. And when you think about Joe Biden in that debate, he didn't prosecute the case. He didn't lay out why voters should vote to put him back in office and what the vision was moving forward. You won't get that with Kamala Harris. And then conversely, or opposite, look, Donald Trump is not going to stand for that. So it'll be much must-watch TV because it's going to be it's going to be hot fire going back and forth. It's going to be acerbic. It's going to have a lot of sound bites. It will be a lot of fireworks for that second debate if it indeed happens in early September.
Well, there was some reporting today by CBS News correspondent Robert Costa asking former President Trump about the debate with the vice president. And they are saying that Trump said he would no longer be taking part in that planned September debate. But of course, things could change, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, look, there was prior to that first debate, a debate about the debates. What were the usefulness of those debates? What would that look like? And was there really going to be a second debate? And if you're Donald Trump and you think you have the wind at your back and you're pushing forward and you did really well because Joe Biden did whatever in that first debate, why would you show up for a second debate? So it will call into question whether there will be that second debate on Tuesday, September 10th, that is supposed to happen. Would that indeed come off? And if you're obviously Kamala Harris and her team, you're going to say that the former president is scared, that he doesn't want to get into a debate, and they're going to egg him on. And Donald Trump often takes that bait. So it'll be very interesting to see if he can stay disciplined and not do it and carry forward, or does he decide to actually get in the ring, and then let's see what these two do. It should be exciting to see.
You're listening to KCBS In Depth. We are speaking with David McEwen, the chair and professor of the Political Science Department at Sonoma State University. I had just a few more questions for you, David, before we wrap up the program. And I want to go back for a minute to the Democrats who are supporting and not supporting the vice president. Obama came out with a statement today, but he did not offer any support of Kamala Harris. The same with Nancy Pelosi. Can you go into a little bit of about the dynamics of many Democrats holding off before endorsing her?
Yeah, I mean, what you saw this past week is you saw, right, Adam Schiff running for U.S. Senate talk about Joe Biden getting out of the race. You saw Zoe Lofgren from the South Bay, been a longtime member of Congress, who's seen as a very serious player within the caucus, the Democratic caucus, come out and talk about Joe Biden needing to get out of the race. Both of those Democrats are very close to their political mentor, the former Speaker of the House, Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi. So it was a signal for what was going on. Obviously, we had reports that were not denied by Chuck Schumer about Joe Biden getting out of the race on the U.S. Senate side, the worry about the drag or coattails going down. And so what we saw was a change that led to many folks at the higher levels pushing behind the scenes. Today, with that announcement, you see the Clintons, who've kind of disappeared from a lot of this debate, come out and endorse Kamala Harris today, talk about Joe Biden. But Barack Obama and former First Lady Michelle Obama on the sidelines. We haven't seen publicly an announcement from the former Speaker, Nancy Pelosi. But what's going on there is behind the scenes, there's a lot of jockeying going on. And while Barack Obama, for example, called about an open process and an open convention, that's the rules committee of that DNC setting forth for their meeting on Wednesday for what that will look like. There's the virtual straw poll that comes within 2 weeks. Then you move to a convention. And if Kamala Harris has not sewn it up between now and then for what's going on, Barack Obama, both the Obamas come in to seal the deal. So they put the book end on pushing Kamala Harris over the top to sit back and serve in a very important role like they served in 2016 and in 2020. That, of course, is a role that will likely endorse or buoy up Kamala Harris, but it's also a role that Joe Biden didn't get in 2016 when Hillary Clinton became the Democratic nominee, and that bristles to this day, the president, current president, Joe Biden.
David McEwen, thanks so much for your time tonight.
Well, thank you very much. Excellent questions, Ryan, and look forward to talking to you again.
Likewise. David McEwen is the chair and professor of the Political Science Department at Sonoma State University. You can hear this interview again online at kcbsradio.com and on the Odyssey app. And stay tuned to KCBS for continuing coverage throughout the evening and in the coming days. For KCBS In Depth, I'm Brian Goble.
You've been listening to KCBS In Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit kcbsradio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.